I'd like to welcome Ken Wyatt, MP, up to be our first speaker. Welcome, Ken.
Good to see you. I want to start by acknowledging our people, the Noongar people, on whose land we meet next to the Dirbal Yerrigan, but also to acknowledge our elders who have gone before, that have taught us the things that we now retain, those who are still with us, and those who will come in the future. It's a pleasure being here today. One of the things that Lynn and I have often talked about is partnerships and the importance of partnerships, and it's great to see three key organisations now working together to bring thoughts, ideas, and the way in which you intend working for the future. I've got an interesting topic of promoting cultural change in organisations. It's always been challenging. But let me say, I want you not to think of an elephant, because that's a challenge. And that's what it's like changing the culture of an organisation. Because in your mind, you would have either seen an Indian elephant, an African elephant, or an elephant from the cartoon Dumbo. But very few of you would have thought of anything different. Because part of the challenge that we have is changing mindsets. And the reason I use that is because words are important because of what they signify or represent, or what your imagination conjures when they're spoken. And what we make the mistake of doing is thinking that everybody understands the same word that we use. And in organisational change, we often assume that what we want to change is clearly understood by other people. And when it fails, we don't understand why, because we think that everybody else should have understood our message. And every word, like an elephant, evokes a frame which can be an imagined or other, it brings into play other kinds of knowledge. Promoting change deals with the mindset. Every one of us has a mindset. We have a passion built around that mindset. If you're involved in diabetes, then you know what is best for us as clients of your services or the clients of your health promotion programs. And that mindset stays strong because that is the thing that drives us to achieve the messages that we want to put outside of the work that we do. But if you have an organisation and you want to change an organisation, then that's like turning the Titanic around. It doesn't matter whether it's an Aboriginal community-controlled health service, because often they are driven by personalities. It doesn't matter whether it's the South Metropolitan Area Health Service that is driven, again, by people who take leadership roles. And organisations are very much more challenging, because something like the health department, it takes substantial pushing to get change. And change is relevant regardless of the size of an organisation. But you also, if you're going to affect change, you've got to understand the culture of your organisation. Because as it says there, it's a set of beliefs. It is a set of practices. It is the way that people do business. It shapes the way the organisation responds to what you want to change or put forward as an idea. If you've ever worked at a senior level, and I've been fortunate to have worked at senior levels in education, health, in both New South Wales and WA, so you soon learn that if you want to affect people's thinking, you've really got to plan thoroughly what you do. You have to play chess. You cannot go in with a single idea thinking, I am going to change the way money, resources and my program works, because you will meet resistance from others who own the same patch that you want to become involved in. And that's a challenge in itself. It also determines how individuals act and what they should value. But let me say, culture is the most powerful influence. And I'm talking not only the culture of an organisation now, but the culture for whom we are part of. Whether we are Indigenous or Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, whether we are from a culture of another country or the culture of this society, they are extremely powerful influences. And if you belong to the dominant culture in any society, then your will be persuasive over the wills of any other cultural grouping. Combine that with the culture of an organisation, then change has to be thought about very carefully, and you have to think about how you're going to influence that change. An organisational culture will be based on the dominant cultural society, and that's a fact of reality. And in those layers, and what I always found in health that was interesting, was the people I had to influence more than any other with the clinicians. And I upset a group of clinicians in Alice Springs one year. I gave a talk on the importance of Aboriginal people being involved in research. And what I said is, we've got to take the notion that we know that some of us don't sit on the right hand of God, that we don't sit on the left hand and pass out edicts, that we often should. And I said, the people I found who were the most impressive of engaging are those who sat at the feet of God, who believed that they were equals to all others within their team. And it was through that process that they became part of a change basis. But look, let me say this to you. Don't ever underestimate the role of organisational culture. I've learnt this in the last 30 years, that the things we've achieved in education and health for our people had to be because of understanding the culture of the organisation. I had to appreciate that culture is not easy to change, and you have to begin with a vision, because if you don't, then you won't achieve what you want. Learn patience. And one of the best animals to teach you patience is the lioness. If you ever watch a pack of lions, the male doesn't do the work. It is the female who quite patiently works out the map in her mind for the prey that she wants. And then by stealth, very slowly, step by step, and very patiently, reaches the point in which she pounces and takes the objective that she has set in her mind, then feeding the pack. It's interesting that the males come in first for the best slices of the animal that she captures. And that's an issue within cultural factors of organisations. And so patience does work. Let me say, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have been here for a long time, and we're still here because we have been patient in the way that we've interacted with government agencies, policies and programs over a period of time. We're not going away. We're going to continue to be here, and we're going to continue to walk with many others who want to be part of the changes that will come. You've really got to focus on a few of those things, such as value, tradition, procedures, symbols, rituals and ceremonies. If you work in an organisation, think about what each of those words mean to you and the way your organisation operates. But there's also an ethical climate, and this is one of the hardest ones to deal with, self-interest. Not only of yourself, but of others. The outcome of the company. I've used profit there because it applies to the private sector as well. Operating efficiently, having individual friendships. Friendships in an organisation can change things. You know, the best people I make friends with are the secretaries of directors. They are the gatekeepers to their time and to their door. You become a friend of theirs, they will do anything for you because they will let you in to influence the leadership. Team interests, social responsibility, personal morality. Let me tell you, it's interesting working through a vision or a concept, only to find that when you've shared the detail with somebody else, all of a sudden you hear the Director General of your organisation say, "We're now going to implement a strategy developed by John." And when they outline the detail, you think, that's the plan I've just given that individual. But what I've learned is you don't fight that, you build on it, because it gives you the capacity to start shaping some of the thinking in the organisation, because the person you've given it to and has used it don't have an understanding of the level of detail that you had in your mind. Don't always overlook the rules and standards and procedures or the laws and professional codes of conduct, because they do become a problem. I've created change by creating a sense of urgency. In New South Wales, when I was there, we were having a discussion and somebody said, the health of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people belongs to the Office of Aboriginal Health. And I said, no, it doesn't. It belongs to everybody. It is everybody's business. The issue for me was about changing the mindset that there were non-Indigenous people whose passion was equal to mine, but whose outcomes were not dissimilar. The only thing different is some of them would not consult or engage with in an equal partnership. But by having 130,000 people dealing with Aboriginal health because they all owned it, started to make a difference in New South Wales, and there are some improvements. And that has worked extremely well. So sometimes it is about letting go, but facilitating and being like the conductor of an orchestra, where you orchestrate the musical pieces, you retain the control by your example and your leadership. You have to create the guiding coalitions, and today is a classic example of three key groups creating a coalition and putting together their effort, their power, and they work like a team, even though they are separate organisations, and we have to do that much more regularly. I still have the fire in my belly, and I am prepared to fight for what I believe in. Even though I've gone out of the bureaucracy now and I enjoy a different role, that hasn't changed the fire that I have for the changes that are needed. I just have to play in a broader field and consider a whole lot of other factors. You have to know what it is that you want to do if you are going to change an organisation. And the other is knowing how it should be done. But the important part is you actually rolling up your sleeves and doing it. Because when you do it and you lead it, you know how you want it done, so you bring others to walk with you. I always find it interesting when companies work together, they create two teams. The teams sit down, take the idea, they work it through, decide on who's got what responsibility, but then they decide who is it that's going to coordinate the actual doing of it. And there's always one individual that does it because they develop the concept. It is the same in the cultural change of what we want for the outcomes for any Australian, particularly for Indigenous. I'd always develop a vision. I develop strategies that go with what I want to achieve because it spells out to other people what the process is. And then I communicate a broad vision, and I use every possible avenue to create that vision and to get it into place. Because if I don't, then I leave out parts. And sometimes it pays to draw maps of who are the people that are key players for what you want to change and what you want to influence. Because the challenge is if you leave one group out, that can thwart the change that you want within the organisation. I also work on the notion that leadership creates the vision. And so I present a sensible and appealing picture of the future, of what I want to achieve in the organisation. The strategies, it's the logic of how the vision can be achieved, because when you do that, it helps other people to understand your vision and what you want within the organisation and how what it is that you want for Aboriginal health is part of everybody's business across the whole of an agency or the whole of an organisation. I think community-controlled health services do this well, and I also believe that the street doctor programs, both in Perth and Fremantle, do this exceptionally well in the way they roll out their programs because they cross every T and dot every I in their planning, in the development of strategies. Management, you've got to consider management because management create the plan. So what you have to do is give them the specific steps and timetables to implement the strategies that you come up with. And then the budgets. The worst part is when you don't control budgets and somebody else controls them. It's fine when you control them because you can shape them to what your vision is. But then what you've got to do is have the plans converted into financial projections and goals and achievements. That's how you get the cultural change in an organisation. You give them the tools that are easy, they're comfortable with, and they are likely to adopt and put into place. Personal challenges, and this is things that I've always had to grapple with at different times because an organisation has an expectation of you. The capacity and confidence to promote cultural change in your organisation. Let me tell you, when you go against the tide, it is tough. People don't love you for it. Not even your own community loves you for it sometimes because you are changing the status quo of the gatekeepers who are quite comfortable with their organisation or their programs. How often do you hear us wipe out a program and re-establish a different one that meets a need because the old one has been going for the last 20 years and we're not seeing any improvements? We never do it. We want to build on. Advocacy for Aboriginal cultural considerations is absolutely important, and you have the battles. They're not easy, but you persist. Having the knowledge and information and sharing that. You know, one of our greatest challenges as human beings is that when we acquire knowledge and information, we know it gives us a powerful position over others. To let that go is often challenging. So we've got to learn to share much better. Look, the capacity to withstand incredible pressures and retaining consistency and integrity, they are important, those last two. Because if you can do that, then people respect you for the position you come from when you want to push for change, and particularly how it is that you want your vision to go. Finally, I want to say it's far better to define yourself and what you aspire to as a catalyst for cultural change than allow yourself to be defined by who you are not. And in that I mean that an organisation, when you are employed by them, you tend to be compliant with what's required of you. You go with the agency's vision. Let me tell you, the two hardest organisations ever to change are education, which is extremely conservative. Education does not like change because they are used to a set pattern in a whole range of activity, teaching, planning, provision of classrooms, etc. Come up with something that's different and outside of the square, then it is challenging. Health is the same. There are many aspects of health that have been with us for the last 120 years. We are changing that thinking slowly. The power relationships between an Aboriginal health worker and the clinician of an organisation is changing. When I first went into health in 1990, the thing that bugged me was Michael Gracie, who was the doctor, and I would attend meetings. I would ask the question, but the clinician always turned to Michael Gracie and answered Michael as though Michael had asked the question. And I found that extremely annoying. So in the end, one day, I said to a fairly eminent clinician at Royal Perth, and I waited till he finished, and I said, so can you tell me the answer to my question? And he said, I just have. I said, no, you told Michael Gracie, who is a clinician, the answer. You faced him, you looked at him. I now want you to give me the same answer, but I want you to look at me. Because in terms of courtesy, when we interact with people, then we engage the people that we have the conversation with. And so on that basis, that certainly became known that I would expect an answer to a question and I would expect the courtesy of being looked at. And over time, I have seen that change considerably. The other thing I hate is when people talk to you and they're looking over their shoulder to see who the next opportunity is that they can talk to that comes into the room, even though you've asked the question. And all of us have been in that. Because what it tells me is, it doesn't matter, they're just hearing the words you're saying, but they're not really interested in the paradigm of change that you are trying to put forward. They're listening to you because it's a convenience, because of the fact that you have asked the question. So there are some challenges. And the other thing is, at time, be prepared to walk alone for the good of all and not for the few, because change will occur. And importantly, and let me say I've learned this lesson through both the encouragement of my parents and others, is believe in yourself. Because even when you don't think that something is possible, but you can see the invisible, still work towards it because you will affect change. And let me say that when we did the COAG, the COAG HAWG, the Health and Ageing Working Group's work for Indigenous health, we set a figure as a group of 22 people that we were looking at about $1 billion conservatively. And somebody on the group said, you won't achieve it. It's not possible. Why don't we set our targets for something that is much less over the 4 years? But I had the opportunity of saying, let's transcend our jurisdictions for a moment. Let's transcend our thinking to a level where we believe that what we ask for, we can achieve through the combined efforts of the team and all of us. And a couple of times we'd get back into our jurisdictional arguments, defending our jurisdiction. But the vision was still there, and we did set a figure of $1.5 billion. because we started to believe as a group and as individuals we had the capacity to change the organisational thinking of the Council of Australian Governments and Health Ministers. And when we wrote our National Partnership Agreement, we thought, if we do this, let's set it out so it sets out the responsibility of the Commonwealth and its obligations. Let's set out the responsibilities of the states and territories and their obligations. Then let's set out the vision that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across this nation would want in this debate. And then we put the bottom line of $1.5 billion and we sent it forward. We were the first group to send our National Partnership Agreement forward, and I co-chaired it with Kathy from Queensland. And when we sent it up, Kathy was at the meeting and she rang me 5 minutes after the decision had been made, and she just came out and said, "Your belief in what we could achieve has been achieved." She said, "They've agreed to $1.5 billion for Aboriginal health through the COAG process." That was unprecedented. But the organisational change and the cultural thinking and the cultural impediments in both our own culture, but also in the context of the organisations, the jurisdictions and the Commonwealth, we challenged and we thought about it and we worked it through. We achieved that in 3 months. We convinced Nicola Roxon that it was well worth her going in and fighting for the money. And when we got that decision, then that was a sweet taste of, not victory, but the sweet taste of having achieved the change in the mindset and the thinking of many who are the gatekeepers to the changes that we want in the long term. And whilst COAG and closing the gap is moving in directions that will achieve outcomes, I am disappointed that it's not universal for every Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person across this nation, because there are gaps still of people who are not recipients of that funding. But nevertheless, let me say that organisational culture should never ever be an impediment to your dream or your aspiration, and that whatever you want to do, plan it, have the vision, but have the strategies that engage others and encourage people to walk with you, because when they walk with you and you have the numbers that walk with you, then you build a force of common good that is based on the vision of improving outcomes for other people, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples within our communities, but more importantly for Australian society. And in closing, can I acknowledge the work that all of you do in your own area, because every bit that you contribute to the jigsaw for change and reform is significant in what will be the outcomes in 20 and 30 years' time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. I'm sure I can say, and I'm sure you'd all agree, that we will go home today with a lot of good key messages out of that speech. So therefore, on behalf of all the conference organisers, we would like to present you with a gift for your time today. So, yeah, thank you.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.